Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, good friends. I am Dr. Vincent Medici, and this is Blood Pressure Day. We're going to go after high blood pressure. And if you're streaming the show, if you're trying to stream the show right now, you have a perfect opportunity to lower your blood pressure because I think our streaming technology is down temporarily. It may go up. So then again, if the streaming didn't work, you wouldn't be hearing me. So in a sense, I'm talking to myself. So that just occurred to me. But for anybody that this might be relevant to, the streaming mechanism may be down right now. But if you're listening on regular radio, like the good old-fashioned days, this transmission should be crystal clear. I want to go after high blood pressure today because I can't think of an application of pharmaceutical medicine that is more a travesty and more unnecessary. Now, you never want to use absolutes when you speak, especially in public, because absolutes are just tantamount to dogma, and dogma really is not really, in the true sense of the word, relevant in any moment. But if there's one drug or one series of drugs that we in the United States use regularly that you could really go after as unnecessary, it's got to be blood pressure meds. And you know, this was first, and I've told this story before, this was first brought to me years ago in chiropractic school by a gentleman who had owned, he was teaching in chiropractic school in the last year you get pharmacology. And this was a bear of a course because the guy that taught it was not only a real chemist, but he had owned a chain of drugstores. So it was a tough course, but it was a great course because, like all great teachers, when they have experience in the real world, well, their information is really paramount. And the one thing this guy said, his first name was Ray. I hope he's still with us. Ray told us. Now, Ray had an acupuncture degree, and I'll tell you why. Ray told us that he used to own a chain of drugstores. And it was on the basis, and almost solely on the basis, of the travesty or the tragedy or the over-application, the unnecessary use of blood pressure meds, that he decided in one spine-tingling moment to sell all his drugstores, retire, get out of the business, and he went to acupuncture school. And then he made this great practice basically doing acupuncture in hospitals because he had all these connections. But the one thing he made clear to me as his student was blood pressure meds are overused. And if you're on one, sooner or later you're going to be on two. And then sooner or later you're going to be on three and four and up to five. And I see this all the time. And it starts with something as ridiculous as an elderly person coming into a doctor's office stressed out because who needs the traffic? And let's face it, you get a little bit older and your nervous system doesn't quite work as well. It's a little tougher to relax after 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years of nonstop stress. And so that little traffic jam on the way to the hospital in a rather imposing environment where we tend to feel that we're only going to get bad news, spikes their blood pressure. Of course your blood pressure is going to spike. Now, there's two numbers with the blood pressure, the top number and the bottom number, the systolic and diastolic number. And when your low number, when your diastolic number, when the one on the bottom, the one that's supposed to be about 70 or 80, goes up to 85 or 90, and when the top one that's supposed to be theoretically 120 goes up to 130 or 140, you're just stressed out. You're stressed out because life is stressful. And if you took that reading 2 hours later in the comfort of your living room, around your grandkids, your children, I mean, hopefully your blood pressure would drop. Maybe it would double. I don't know. But the point is that once you begin to relax, once you get out of that intimidating environment, your blood pressure is going to go down. And yet, I guarantee you, become that little birdie and fly into the hospital rooms across the United States every day. And what you're going to see is your doctor say, well, your blood pressure is 150 over 90 or 140 over 90. Obviously, we got to put you on meds. Meds. And this is when the problem begins. And I'm going to explain to you why. By the time the show ends today, you're going to have a great understanding of why these meds really, in the long term, mess you up more than they're going to help you. And we've got the stats to prove that. But just let's take a moment here to look at the meds, the number of meds that we have. And this employs grad students looking for jobs all over the world every single day to find new and better meds to lower blood pressure when you might just need a good night's sleep. And this is where the travesty begins. But let's take a look at some of these meds. Okay, first of all, we have diuretics. Now, the word diuretic is more or less in the vernacular of everyday life. People know diuretics are water pills. They make you urinate a lot, and when you urinate a lot, you take out of the blood vessel the water. Again, the blood vessel, blood is 99% water, and you take all that water out of the blood vessel, of course the blood pressure is going to go down. So think about that. So let's try to learn a little bit about cardiac physiology here. And that if you're inside a blood vessel, so I want you to shrink yourself down to, you know, micron size, go inside a blood vessel, go inside a water hose. A blood vessel, an artery, where you get high blood pressure is just an elastic rubber hose. And you think of it the same way. It can stretch out like a balloon, and it can clamp down shut. And that elasticity in the blood vessel is what creates the word blood pressure. So I want you to get that visual now. You can do this. This is what's so great about radio. It forces the imagination far beyond just watching it on a screen where it's given to you, you see. Years ago, we called TV the boob tube, remember? Why? Because people used to sit around in groups and listen to people on the radio, and it would spark the imagination. That's something we're losing today. So let's celebrate the radio for this reason. So go into the theater of your mind now, and just picture the artery, which is a thick, elastic tube with blood in it. Now, in the blood is mostly water. If you're tied up on the inside of that tube, and there's a gush of blood coming, and you decrease the volume of that blood because you take out the water, you can see there's going to be less pressure. There's going to be less outward pressure on the inner wall of the artery. Now, that's pretty easy to understand. So the first thing we give you is a diuretic. And there's a number of diuretics, and we have to be careful that when we give you PP pills, we put potassium back in. I remember years ago, my grandmother, who lived to 94, I remember being a boy, like 5 years old, and my grandmother, the word was, lost her mind. Grandma, who was elderly even when I was five, lost her mind. And I remember my grandmother starting to yell and scream hysterically on a Sunday during a family visit, and there she was, and my grandfather was beside himself, and my father, who was an engineer, is trying to figure this out because my grandmother, she had such a marvelous mind, and all of a sudden she lost it. She was out of it. And what it was is they gave her a diuretic, which is a water pill, which she didn't need anyway, but they gave it to her, and she peed out, she urinated out all her potassium. They forgot to give her potassium. And my dad, who wasn't a medic, but he was an engineer, figured out that it had to do, and again, you got to understand, these are not the days when you could just Google up side effects of blood pressure meds. This is in the 60s. You have to go to the library to get any information. But my dad figured out that she lost potassium. So if you don't get potassium with a water pill, you can run into serious problems. You can go into cardiac arrest, atrial fib. Most of all, you start to act senile. So right there, we run into problems. And I'll never forget the day my father mashing up a banana, giving it to my grandmother, and within 15 minutes, my grandmother starts to become sharp and cognizant again. Great moment. We have to use your common sense. So we have diuretics. Then we have beta blockers. Beta blockers slow down the nerve impulses to the heart and the blood vessels. So the heart beats slower. If the heart beats slower, the blood pressure is going to drop a little bit. Now there's another concept. So concept one, we give you a diuretic. We take water out of the blood vessel so you decrease the blood pressure. But then some smart pharmacologist figures out another angle on blood pressure. And I'm going through this as it relates to the different types of drug classes, guys, because this is the way you learn the physiology so you can really understand where this is all going to become climax later on. About 40 minutes from now, you'll get the point. So we have beta blockers. And a beta blocker is simply going to tell the heart to slow down. So if your heart is going boom, 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 fast with power, you can see you're going to get more blood forced into the inside of the artery. And that greater volume of blood pumped with greater intensity. It's like you're at the end of the water hose and you're blowing into the hose with greater force. You can see how the volume of fluid hitting the inside of the water hose or your arterial system is going to feel more pressure. So we come in with beta blockers, and that simply attacks the nerve so the heart doesn't beat with as much power. Now that may be good in acute situations, but you'll understand the long-term effect of this. Then we get to ACE inhibitors. It's the third type of blood pressure drug. Now, an ACE inhibitor blocks the production of angiotensin II. Okay? Angiotensin II, little fun fact, is a chemical produced in the kidney. And angiotensin II produced in the kidney causes the blood vessels to constrict. It's a vasoconstrictor. It's what might be used to raise blood pressure. So we come up with different ACE inhibitors. Lisinopril is a famous ACE inhibitor. And these ACE inhibitors then will block angiotensin II, and you won't be as likely to constrict. Now, mind you, all these drugs have to be excreted from the body. And a lot of them, like lisinopril as a classic example, a lot of ACE inhibitors, which are used regularly, are not excreted through the biliary system. They don't go out through the liver. They go out through the kidney and bladder, which means what? You're going to be a peeing at night. Not so much because they give you the water pill, which a lot of times they do. They give you the water pill plus the ACE inhibitor plus the potassium to back up the water pill. Or they give you a potassium-sparing diuretic, and then you don't have to have the potassium. We play all these games. And we're forgetting the fundamentals, which I'll give you in a second. But one thing you can already see, and I hope you're ahead of me on this, is that when we give you an ACE inhibitor, and because it excretes through the kidneys, and you're up urinating, you don't get your sleep, and you don't get your sleep, you're going to be stressed the next day, and stress, as we'll explain, is going to go right into that cycle to, what, perpetuate your high blood pressure. So much for the ACE inhibitors. We do this all the time. I get the MD on the phone, and I say, well, we're on X dose. Can we at least try, doctor, half that dose? Well, why would you want to do that? Well, because some research shows, and again, this isn't really at the top of the New England Journal, but research shows that sleep and high blood pressure do have a relationship, and my patient is up urinating all night long because she's trying to urinate out the drug. And as we well know, the ACE inhibitor, the lisinopril, doctor, is excreted through the kidney and bladder. Can we at least have the dose, monitor the blood pressure more closely, and if we find out then that the blood pressure is not raising, so much the better. And 9 times out of 10, the medical doctor will say, that makes a lot of sense, let's do it. Okay? Again, medical diplomacy. That show I did months ago. Medical diplomacy. Speak to your doctor correctly. Don't attack. Be polite. The truth is, a lot of doctors would love to have and quarter the doses. They really would. Doctors don't make money prescribing pharmaceutical drugs. Okay? So if you're in the holistic community, you're listening to this show, understand, there's no vested interest in a medical doctor pushing drugs. But there is an emerging standard of care. Medical doctors are told from the time they're babies to be good doctors and use the standard of care. And then we go in and we make the standard of care. Try this blood pressure drug, try that blood pressure drug, try the third blood pressure drug, the fourth, the fifth, and get really good at using a multitude of blood pressure drugs over that 10 to 20 year span in your patient's life, because statistics show that will reduce the incidence of stroke and congestive heart failure. So your doctors are prescribing these things as good doctors to the standard of care. What you want to do is use your education, your intelligence, to politely, with diplomacy, challenge that standard of care, and you're going to find that a lot of doctors are going to see the reason behind it. Believe me, there is a revolution with inside allopathic medicine. Truly there is. Beta blockers. I went through them. Diuretics. ACE inhibitors. Then we've got calcium channel blockers. I could be wrong, but I think that's like Verampril. I can never pronounce that one. Calcium channel blockers. They keep calcium. Now just get your gut in on this one. Use your intuitive self. Here's a moment to use your common sense. Forget understanding science, pharmacology, pharmacokinetics. Forget all that. Just your common sense. You fix cars for a living. You don't know beans about potassium and sodium. What you do in this case is just use your common sense. Calcium channel blockers prevent calcium from entering the muscular cells of the heart and blood vessels. And this causes the blood vessels to relax and the pressure to go down. Well, it's true. It is definitely true that calcium is critical in the contractile process. Nothing contracts across membranes without the infusion or the flux of calcium across a membrane. That's true. So to contract, we need calcium. If you contract, you raise blood pressure. So some genius comes up with the idea that what we'll do is we'll stop calcium from contracting. Now think about that. An ion, calcium, a mineral, something that God put there with very high intelligence, to say the least, to assure us normal physiology, something so fundamental as a mineral. And we are deciding then that we're going to start to interfere with its diffusion across membranes because of something we call high blood pressure. Doesn't make any sense. And in the long term, you're going to create another type of damage to the physiology of the heart. Hearts need calcium to contract. Calcium inside the cell sets up all sorts. Now, wait a minute. Remember that story about pH? That's right, pH. Doesn't the cell need calcium to open up its membrane to oxygen? Think about that. My good listener, who no doubt have listened to other shows, Dr. Marshall's show on pH, we need ionized calcium to cross the membrane of the cell to open up the oxygen channels. And once the oxygen goes in, the Krebs cycle can take on dump the oxygen into the electron transport chain and produce what? Adenosine triphosphate, the currency of the cell. The very thing that the heart cell needs to repair with, or the muscular wall of the artery, the tunica media of the artery, the very element, oxygen, that the heart cell or the arterial wall needs to repair itself. Now you're going to deny it, because to deny the calcium is to deny the oxygen, is to deny the Krebs cycle, is to deny the production of ATP and thus the cell repair. So some other genius comes up with this idea that we're going to use a calcium channel blocker to keep calcium from entering the muscular cells of the heart. And where is all the research to show that the long-term effect of this will derange or depress the rate at which the heart cell repairs itself? Where is that research? That research is not there. Perhaps I could do that research. Well, if I could, someone would have to pay me to do that. I, like you, and many other people in the holistic community, have livings to make. So somebody has to pay us to do these things. And we're very busy with our patients. And if we're very good at what we do, we have patients who depend upon us sometimes to stay alive. And so what are we supposed to do? Take these understandings and just leave our practices? Go up into the high towers of academia and get paid by who to teach us to do that, to teach us to research and allow us and pay us to research? So you see, it doesn't happen. But if you go into, and this is my point to you, if you go into the table talk conversations between scientists to understand the biology, the self-phys of the body, and you talk like this, they will start to agree with each other. Yeah, a calcium channel blocker is a cost-benefit situation. And if you've got somebody who will not change their diet, they will not change their lifestyle, they're very psychologically duressed, so that their stresses are unbelievable. They've just gone to a divorce. They've lost their fortune in the stock market. They've lost their jobs. They're 65 years old. They're 100 pounds overweight. They have a very physical job for a living. And they're starting to get dizzy. Don't send them to your holistic practitioner. Give them a calcium channel blocker. So I've kind of reversed the argument now, haven't I? Certainly I reverse the argument. Drugs are good when they're what? Appropriate. Drugs are a blessing when they're appropriate. Grad students, chemists that create pharmaceutical drugs and educate medical doctors to use them to a standard of care are doing the world a service. So let's try to use common sense. There's an appropriate use for pharmaceutical drugs. And medical doctors know that. And then there is an inappropriate use for pharmaceutical drugs. Classic example, you've got an 85-year-old woman in the doctor's office, scared out of her wits, half senile. She doesn't even know where she is. Her loving granddaughter, grandson, son, daughter bring her there. And her blood pressure spikes to 150 over 90 because she's scared. The doctor doesn't pick up on any of it and starts the meds. And it's one med, two med, three med. Now she's trying to excrete it through her kidneys at night when she sleeps. So she's up peeing all of a sudden. Then she's given a water pill just for good measure. And now she's up 4 to 5 times a night urinating. And her blood pressure comes down a little bit. But because she's not sleeping, her blood pressure's not going to come down enough. In fact, you're going to create the blood pressure problem that you tried to prevent. And so, of course, since the woman's 85, her doctor, her loving medical doctor, wants her to come back fairly regularly because we've got to monitor this blood pressure. And the son or daughter or grandchild doesn't understand the medicine either, and so willingly brings the woman back. And of course, because she's not sleeping, her blood pressure is either not responding or it's worse. Thus, we put on another drug or two. And before we have it, an absolutely unnecessary moment is turned into this travesty. Now, that's the inappropriate application. And if there's any medical doctor listening to this show today, half of them deep down in their hearts are going to agree. But that has nothing to do with giving a calcium channel blocker to a cab driver that's 100 pounds overweight, that just lost his corporate job, that's going through his divorce, and he's got kids to put through college, and he just can't cut it financially, and he'd just as soon drive his cab in New York City off a bridge as change his diet. So sometimes to prevent a stroke or a heart attack or somebody simply just passing out while they're operating a motor vehicle, those blood pressure meds are a blessing. Fascinating, huh? Fascinating to me. As a doctor, you've got to counsel people to make these judgment calls all the time. And we've got alpha blockers. It's another way to reduce nerve impulses. We've got alpha beta blockers. We've got nervous system inhibitors. We've got vasodilators. And I'm sure over the next 10 years, we'll have another 15 drugs. Now, what's my point as I bury you with the data here, the information? Number one, the point is, there are mechanisms within the human body that cause constriction of the artery and dilation of the artery. Those mechanisms are related to the autonomic nervous system. A word I use, a word I stress. I give you books to relate to this word, autonomic balance, Hans Selye, The Stress of Life. But the physical experience of this, if you're not having it, then you're going to be left in the dust in the moment of truth, meaning it doesn't mean anything to you to understand that there's two nervous systems. One, the sympathetic nervous system, delivering electrical impulses through chemicals. Acetylcholine, adrenaline, norepinephrine, epinephrine, cortisol. There's a nervous system delivering drugs to your organ systems that will cause constriction. And then there's a parasympathetic nervous system delivering acetylcholine, other types of neurotransmitters, all sorts of incendiary chemicals. The list is endless. The research is always expanding, but it comes down to concepts. And the concept is stress gone amok causes and leaves the body in chronic vasoconstriction. Stress. What stress? You're not under stress. You have a job, a nice family, good kids. You don't relate to stress. Nothing's wrong, and you have high blood pressure. You see, the problem is we have overeducated the public with meds and undereducated the public with experiences that educate their body into what stress is. Okay? What is the experience that you're going through when you're stressed? Well, let me give you an example of this. This is everyday life. You go to the hairstylist. Men that have hair, that are blessed in middle age with hair. And women who always have hair go to hairdressers. And one thing that the hairdresser does in the beginning, and of course you have your relationship with your hairdresser. Yes, you do. Do you realize, and perhaps you do, you may know your hairdresser longer than you know most of the people that you call friends. Hairdressers might be 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years old. Your hairdresser might know your children. Your hairdresser might know your grandchildren. It really is like that. It's amazing. You get elderly women in that go to the hairdresser that they've known since they were 20. Beautiful. Congratulations if that's you. And your hairdresser for 20, 30, 40, 50 years washes your hair. And you're comfortable with your hairdresser. You've told your hairdresser, probably woman to woman, secrets you don't tell anybody. And you're lying there on that afternoon or evening after a busy day at work or that little break you take from the kids, and you lie back into that sink that just fits your head so you get that little stretch on the back of your neck, and your hairdresser starts washing your hair. Now, it's perfectly intimate because it's perfectly not intimate. It's something that occurs once a month, once every 2 months, once every 3 months, whatever. You're there and then you're gone. It's like meeting a stranger on the train. You can be very comfortable because it's going to be over. And they massage their hands into your head. I want you to catch this because you get that feeling, that wonderful feeling like, oh, I can just get rid of it all. That's what you have to be doing every single day. That's what you have to be doing every single minute. Unless you're in a certain part of the day where you have to step on the gas. So life is two things. Life is stepping on the gas, and life is stepping off the gas. Notice I didn't say putting on the brakes. I just said stepping on the gas and stepping off the gas. Because relaxation is not putting on the brakes. That's a forced, deliberate, stressful event. But taking your foot off the brakes is just turning in a direction where you're not stressing the accelerator. Tell you a story. The other day, I look out the window, and there's this gorgeous bobcat up here in the mountains. And the bobcats are hungry, so there's a bunch of them coming down, more out into the open. And this bobcat is young, healthy, big cat, like three times the size of a normal cat, house cat. This bobcat's strutting around, and it's hungry. It's on the prowl. And I watch it from the window, from the very window that we're doing the show from today. I watch this bobcat sneak up on the rabbit. You've seen that somewhere. Even on TV, you've seen it. Great moment. This bobcat sneaking up on this cute little rabbit. And it lunges for the rabbit. And the rabbit, who's very hip to this bobcat, who might be too paralyzed by fear to run, shoots off into the distance. And the bobcat chases it about 15 feet and then gives up because nothing's faster than the rabbit. I think we've got the rabbit and the cheetah. And the cheetah can hit 70 miles an hour. And the rabbit, though, can hit 40, 45 miles an hour and sustain that speed, I think, longer than any animal on the planet. It's got some absolutely unbelievable physiological ability, these rabbits. So rabbits always outrun bobcats and mountain lions and coyotes, etc. You got to sneak up on a rabbit. And in this case, the rabbit got away. Now that rabbit, later on in the day, just might be lying. It might be 20 minutes later that very same rabbit is going to lie in the sun. And I watch them up here in the mountains. I watch them lie on their back and rub their fur into the soil upside down. Amazing thing to see a little cute bunny rabbit do that. It plays in the sun. It rubs its face into the dirt. It returns to that euphoric, godly, totally relaxed, deeply relaxed, hypnotic trance in flow with nature. And yet, in a single instant, in a flash, in the blink of an eye, this rabbit can lunge up into the air and shoot off and be running at 45 miles an hour within a second or two. Now, you've got to have control over your autonomic nervous system to do that. The brain senses the threat. An impulse goes from the brain to the heart. At the speed of light, an impulse goes to the artery, and that artery begins to receive the massive dose of blood that the booming heart shoots out. And there's a slight regulation of the diameter of the artery to get the blood pressure up enough to sustain the process. If you were vasodilating, seriously, if the blood pressure was dropping at the moment where you had to shoot off and run, you'd faint. And that's what happens to people with weak adrenals. Just at the moment of stress, where they need to get that increase in blood pressure so they can shoot off into action, their adrenals betray them. You don't get the proper diameter in the artery, and they faint instead of run. It's like if the rabbit about to take off began to faint instead of sprint. So you've got to have a tremendous control over your neurochemistry, your autonomic chemistry as it relates to the different chemicals, cortisol, adrenaline, that have to be secreted to go and actively escape death. And at the same time, that rabbit, a few hours later, will lie on the floor back in the bliss state. Now, that's a phenomenon that as children we take for granted. It's a phenomenon that as adults we begin to lose. We lose our ability to do that. We can't feel stress anymore because we have nothing to contrast it with. If we're under and in a chronic state of stress, if we're in a chronic state of stress, we're constantly secreting cortisol into the blood. And if we're constantly putting cortisol into the blood, we're going to go into vasoconstriction. If we're sort of in that state and our blood pressure is a little bit high and we're given drugs which keep us up all night urinating, as many of the blood pressure meds do, then we end up in a situation where we're going to be more stressed out because we're not getting our sleep. And what's going to happen? Your blood pressure is going to go up again. On top of which, as your blood pressure continues to go up and you get more stressed, the nervous system is going to increasingly model itself to that pattern, meaning you're going to go more sympathetic dominant. You're going to start to accommodate and become comfortable with a high stress state. The part of you that says, I got to slow down. The part of you that remembers what it's like to relax. The part of you that says, gee, things are a little bit out of hand. I've got to go on vacation. Guys, this is the science you're getting right now. This is the relevant functional science. The part of you that knows that it's got to slow down to enjoy what it once understood as pleasure in your experience, the carefree days, that part of you begins to die as your entire psychological being begins to just adapt to a high-stress environment. You lose the ability to relax. Look, we see this all the time between Los Angeles and New York City. People come out here from New York City all the time. Think about it. You know someone like this. And the first thing they say is, gee, you know, there's nothing out here in L.A. It's boring. It's just sun and trees and palm trees and the beach, and there's nothing to do out here. And people out in L.A. say, yeah, there's a lot to do. Why don't you just chill? Why don't you just kick back and be happy that the sky is blue and it's January and it's 75 degrees? And the New Yorkers looking for what? Noise. Confusion. What we call anxiety, they call excitement. Guarantee you there's a lot more high blood pressure there. It's a stereotypical example. The stereotype that fits what I'm trying to describe is the guy that's so stressed out, everybody else sees it, but he doesn't. This is what we all do on one degree or the other, but not the rabbit. Not your little kitty cat that goes out, gets into fights, dodges coyotes, owls, hawks, bobcats, mountain lions, and then goes back in the house and purrs all afternoon. If you get high blood pressure, if you are diagnosed in a hospital and your blood pressure is 140, 150, over 90, very, very often, 90% of the time, it's very important for you to test that blood pressure at home 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times a day to make sure that, number one, that is not a false diagnosis. That just might be temporary stress. All day long, your blood pressure is going up. Your blood pressure is going to spike naturally. So why just freeze frame one moment and say, on the basis of this one moment, you have high blood pressure? That's nonsense. That's wrong. And once you're on those drugs, you're going to get high blood pressure if you didn't have them. So there's number one. Number two, those two numbers. The top number is called the systolic blood pressure. The bottom number is the diastolic blood pressure. The top number is the blood pressure inside the artery when the heart contracts. When the right and left ventricle contract, when they contract and force blood out, the top number represents how many millimeters of mercury, so to speak, the heart can force up the blood pressure clock. I mean, the blood pressure gauge, if you remember the old ones. And the bottom number is the pressure inside the artery when the heart, the left and right ventricle of the heart, the power parts of the heart, are not contracting. And really, the bottom number is what reflects. The diastolic is the more important number, because the diastolic reflects the elasticity of the artery. So let's talk about the two numbers, the top one, the systolic, and the bottom one, the diastolic. The top one, the systolic, is simply a measure of the two ventricles of the heart forcing blood into the inside of the artery and expanding that artery. And the bottom one is a measure of the pressure inside the vessels of the heart. After the heart, the vessel starts to return, after it's been stretched out, and it returns to its normal resting position. The bottom number reflects the elasticity of the artery. So if you're on the inside of an artery and there's a gush of fluid coming down, and that fluid hits you, tied to the inside of an artery, if you want to lower the blood pressure, you need elastic arteries. Now, I want you to get this. If you want to lower the blood pressure, you want elastic arteries. Why? Because if that force of blood hits the inside of the artery and that artery is flexible, it stretches out. It ducks the punch. It slips the punch. It rolls with the force of the blood coming down the shaft of the artery. And if it can't, because the artery's inelastic, the artery's damaged, or on the inside wall of the artery, there's a lot of calcium plaque, hard plaque, the artery loses its elasticity. And that's when that bottom number starts to go up. So when I see people who are just stressed out get medicated, when their blood pressure is 140, 150 over 90, I think that's an overuse. And I suggest you think in those terms. Talk to your doctor. But if your bottom number is up at 110, 120, 130, that's an appropriate use of blood pressure meds, because there's something wrong with that artery. It's not the autonomic nervous system. Okay, now you got to put it together. Is your brain and your neuroendocrine system, your hormonal system, is it just in a sympathetic dominant place so you just can't get out of arterial vasoconstriction? For all the reasons I just elaborated on in detail, is that the reason you have high blood pressure? Or is that low number, the diastolic one, reflecting the fact that the artery has lost its elasticity? And if it's the low one, this is where the blood pressure meds can be important, because you're going to have a much tougher time of regulating your blood pressure, of bringing it down. This is when exercise, and this is when sleep, and this is when dietary changes, and this is when weight loss don't really change your blood pressure too much. Because if you've lost the elasticity of the artery and the tunica media, the muscular wall of the artery, has been damaged. It has failed to repair itself. Maybe because you took a calcium channel blocker and you went into aerobic, or rather anaerobic, metabolism within those cells, mind you. But for whatever reason, if you've lost the elasticity of the artery. If those arterial cells have not repaired themselves, or if you have thick layers of calcific plaque or atherosclerotic plaque, fatty plaque or calcific plaque, and you're just really, really in a bad place for whatever reason, and that lower number is up, now it may pay to bring in a drug short term and then get on the health wagon. Because if you've lost the elasticity inside the artery, the first thing you have to look to are the fats, the essential fatty acids, and health of the arterial system. Look, the medical anthropology has made this simple. The Eskimos eating tons of raw fat each day, saturated raw fat. When Scandinavian scientists, as they do, took it upon themselves to explore the anatomy of dead Eskimos, of Eskimos whose bodies they had legal and moral right to investigate, would find consistently, it's in the literature, that the Eskimo at 80, 85, 90 had the elasticity within the arterial walls of an infant, of a little kid. That with all this saturated fat, and no, it is not that the genes, that the genetics of the Eskimo just accommodates the saturated fat, whereas our bodies from Europe or wherever we're from wouldn't. It has nothing to do with that. We've proven this with the Maasai from Africa, another family of people in Central South Africa who don't get any of this heart disease and strokes and high blood pressure and the rest of it, and whose arteries eating tons, once again, of this so-called saturated dangerous fat, don't have any of these cardiovascular problems. And we can find anthropological illustrations of this all over the world in many, 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 many cases, volumes, etc. And my point to you is the essential fatty acids, the raw fats, all the omegas and the rest are critical. And for years of deficiency, you're going to begin to lose the elasticity of the artery. Now, I mind you that the deposition of calcium into the inner wall of the artery is another big problem. That's arterio, hardening of the arteries. Skinny people get hardening of the arteries. Arterial congestion is not just for fat people. People who are overweight, people who are obese, people who don't watch their diets and eat all the fatty foods, and their cholesterol is high, and their triglycerides are high, and they're basically diabetic, even though it hasn't been diagnosed, so on and so forth. These people put fat, athero, A-T-H-E-R-O, atherosclerotic plaque on the inside wall of the artery. But lots of skinny people have arteriosclerosis, calcium plaque. Those are the people who have bony fingers. They have those knobs on their fingers. You see them all the time. In Chinese medicine, they're called wood types, W-O-O-D, wood types. They're called liver wood types, liver fire wood types. It's a certain type of a person. Yes, you can look at a person and from their physical structure just about figure out what they're going to get in their life that's going to take them down. It really does work that way. Liver fire wood types. If you're sitting there with bony fingers, little knobs on your fingers, arthritis you'll call it, and you understand what arthritis is in your body, look for the deposition of hard calcium into the valves of your heart, aortic stenosis, mitral valve stenosis, pulmonic stenosis. Look for little plaques up in the brain. You may not, and hopefully you won't succumb to that, but that's your tendency. And you all know the solution because you listen to straighttalk.cc. You get on the website, you archive the shows to prevent the deposition of calcium hydroxyapatite into the inner walls of the blood vessels. You have to chelate the calcium with citrate from potassium before you precipitate your calcium out of the blood in a granular form, which clogs up your arteries and creates arteriosclerosis, so we're talking high blood pressure. Let's just do that. Before you precipitate that calcium out of solution, you bind it up with citrate. And where do you get that citrate from? You get it from foods that have potassium. Potato juice. One potato. Take the skin off. Put it in the Vitamix or the blender. Add a cup of spring water to it. Put in a little bit of sea salt and drink that 3-4 times a week. Be no stranger to celery juice. Be no stranger as you take all your other herbal remedies, your nanos, so far and so forth. Be no stranger to 20, 30 ounces of celery juice per day. Green juices, rich in potassium, like potatoes, do what? They chelate the calcium so it doesn't precipitate out. And by the way, those are cooling, as in heating, cooling juices. Cooling juices are great for these liver fire types. Those red ruddy fire types, red hair, knobs on the fingers, volatile tempers, very bright, very charismatic, very powerful in their frames, very successful in business. They understand the balance between aggression and diplomacy. Very effective people. They run companies. But nonetheless, they're the ones that tend to plaque up with calcium. Now, fatty plaque on the inside of the artery. So you can't discuss blood pressure without discussing arterial health. So we're discussing arterial health. So we've kind of moved here. Before you succumb to 4, 5, 6 blood pressure drugs in your 60s or 70s, what were you doing to really sustain the health of the artery in the first place? Hopefully you were listening to this show. StraightTalk.cc, if you're new to the show, I hope we can at least stream this show today. If we can't, we're going to get a recording of the show up later on in the day. In addition to which, the school, the Medici Institute for Advanced Nutritional Education, I'm running 2 classes concurrently. Great success. I'm starting a third class. We're going to do that on March 11th. I hope I have that date right. March 11th. I've got about 22, 23 people for this class. I'm going to stop it at like 35. And so I'll close it out within the next, 2-3 weeks. And I'll start my third class. The idea is I want to do one class every Sunday at the Premier Center in Santa Monica. We've had an over 90% return rate, which is fantastic. And I think my dream here is coming true, where for $125 a month, we can educate you to understand all these things. And then we can make relationship with each other in relatively small groups, start chat rooms, and start to create a powerhouse of communication in the public, taking advantage of the fact that you can understand this stuff if it's taught clearly, concisely. That will at least bring down cost. So that's March 11th. The website, straighttalk.cc. I am working on the Medici Library. I'm going to have a dynamic computer graphic library where it's going to be like a virtual reality experience with all these books on the bookshelves of this library that I'm going to allow you to have access to. And each book will have 3 pages in it of excerpts from the book. Check this out, of excerpts from the book that I find fascinating that you need to read. And then I'm going to insert little commentary below each of these excerpts by me. And so you're going to peruse, you're going to scan my library, and then if you want the book, well, then you go out and you get the book. If not, you just take the essence of the book, and I'm going to do that with the articles also. And I think by September or so, I should have about 500, 600, hopefully 1,000 books in the library, all categorized. And so the idea was to take advantage of my 25 years of doing this so that you, busy in your life as a CPA or whatever you do for a living, can just cut to the chase and we can get to the essence of the conversation. So if you like the show, you'll love the library. So that's March 11th for the next school. Just sign up or call 310-320-1132. Speak to Clem Alita, and she'll sign you up for the school. On the website, you can learn more about the school also, and you can leave your name and email address on the website to tell me that you want to come to the school. If you do, and we'll contact you that way. So either straighttalk.cc or 310-320-1132. Okay, back to the action. And, of course, as always, not enough time. I've got 3.5 minutes. Okay. So, one, calcific plaque. No, let's go back. One, you walk into the hospital. Your blood pressure is 140 over 90. They put you on meds. Stop it right there. Go home. Make sure you get that blood pressure cuff. Put that cuff on throughout the day. I guarantee you, many, many, many cases, we're going to be dipping back down, dropping down to 120 over 80. You don't need any meds. If that's not the case and you have to go on the meds, go on them at the lowest possible dose. Even more than that, with consent of your medical doctor and the opinion on your behalf requesting that you don't do the meds yet, look for the other ways to heal the body. Number one, remember the bobcat and the rabbit. And if you're not the rabbit, if you don't know how to go out and have a stressful day and relax, learn to do that. Get on and listen to more of my tapes. Number two, calcific plaque. If you are plaquing up inside the arteries, and how would you know that? Lots of things to determine that. If you're starting to get knobby in your fingers, if you've got arthritis, if on x-rays they see deposition of calcium hydroxyapatite into different parts of your bony system, and you've got high blood pressure, chances are you're starting to depose hard calcium on the inner lining, if you have it in your family history. In any event, get into the green juices, get into potato juice, and start to search your body for a change in the way it feels as it relates to your overall health as you bring in more healthy juices, those two included. Now, if it's fatty plaque, if it's atherosclerosis, which will increase blood pressure, then you're a classic American heart case. The first thing you've got to do is get off the bad fats and start ingesting the good fats. And my listeners, I'm sure, know where the good fats are. Number two, open up the gallbladder. Open the gallbladder, because if the gallbladder's patent, if you have biliary patency, you'll get out the excess fat, and then it won't have too much time to start to line the inner lining of your arteries. Oh, my God. 60 minutes is already gone. I am Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc. We'll record this show. If it isn't being recorded, we'll have it up by tonight. God bless you. See you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.